From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
It's been a strangely mild fall so far in the Northeast where Ken Drews and I both garden, but some recent overnight freezes served as a reminder, get the must-do chores done or else, because who knows when the weather will lower the boom for good. On our list still, collecting some seeds of natives to sow later, and cleaning and preparing tools for storage, lifting tender bulbs and tubers to stash, where to overwinter, the nursery pots of things we bought that never found their permanent home in the ground. Oops. All that and more, but first this message.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
Ken Drews, author of 20 garden books and old friend, is back today to help with the countdown to getting the garden really tucked in for the winter ahead, and especially to remind himself and me and all of us not to get lulled into procrastination, even if it has been in the 60s some days here the last week. Hi, Ken. How are you today?
Margaret, you're reading my mind again.
Yeah, I know. It's kooky, right?
Maybe you're reading every gardener's mind.
Yeah, the weather certainly does not give us the usual signals that I used to expect by this far into November, that's for sure.
Well, usually by this far into November, we're freaking out completely because we haven't done anything.
Right. And,
but at least we are in Indian summer here because we had killing frosts and then we have the warm temperatures above 60.
Yeah. I'm going to go up into the meadow, the little meadow above my house today, and collect some more seeds from some of those, goldenrods and asters and things that are up there that their seeds haven't dispersed, but they're looking good. And maybe I'm a little late, but it's not too late, and put them in paper bags. And
it's not too late. Right. Oh, well, that's interesting that you said put them in paper bags, because I was going to say, don't do it in the field, especially because we're going to have wind. I mean,
right.
You can cut some little twigs with the flower heads on them and put them in bags right there. Label them. Now, I guess you're going to have separate bags. But when you get home, indoors, out of the wind, spread some newspaper or some white paper and get the seeds out there. Because when you do it in the field, Ken.
Who are you talking to over there?
Ever try to get the milkweed? Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So you're saying, because I usually take either cups, Tupperware kind of things, whatever, or I take the paper bags up, depending on if stuff is wet and, depends. I like it to be on a dry day if I can. And just kind of, if I have the paper bag, I've already written on it what it is. And I just, kind of cut it and let it fall upside down into the bag,
That's great.
Yeah. Okay.
There's a guy in Texas who invented something with a dust buster and a tube and stuff. I mean, he was collecting a lot of seed from his own prairie, and he'd suck them into the dustbuster.
I don't think I need any more gadgets. I think I just need to make sure and go and get some, because I want to, repeat them in certain spots, like some interesting things that I've started to sew in and so forth. I want to be a little more deliberate.
Gotcha. I want to ask you what they are, but can you name one?
I have six kinds of goldenrod, don't ask me which ones. And, and I sort of think of them as the early one, the tall one.
Right.
I have to always look it up. Yeah. Some of the asters that do better in, not in the meadow, but nearby in sort of a shady area, like the big leaf aster and the white wood aster and so forth. And, I just want to be, as I said, a little more deliberate, winter sow them. And actually I did an interview with Heather McCargo of Wild Seed Project up in Maine, maybe a month ago. And we can put a link to that, the how-to steps, how to propagate them in the transcript of the show. Yeah. But I want to, I just want to make more of certain things and repeat them, because nature sows where it wants to sow and I want it in other places.
No, you just want more.
More. Yeah. So you're doing some of that too?
Well, it's funny. Some of the stuff isn't ripe that I'm looking for. So things are screwy this year.
Yeah. What are you on the hunt for?
Well, I went to Pycnanthemum because I love Pycnanthemum. And
the mountain mint, is that what we call them?
Mountain mint, right. And this is tenuifolia, not the muticum, which I'll check that too. But the tenuifolium, the seed heads are, I mean, I guess there's seeds in there, but they're completely soft and pliable and no evidence of being ready. So,
right.
But they will be, and I'll check them out.
Huh. Interesting. And then, as I said sort of a little bit before, you know, what sometimes happens is they are all almost ripe, and then we get a week of rain, and, you know, and then they're all wet and nasty, and, you know,
or so you blink.
Yeah. So it's kind of looking, I'm looking for that dry day when they're also ripe. So, so Pycnanthemum, that's what you're on the hunt for. Okay. And what else is going on over there in Ken's garden?
Well, I've been preparing to move. I'm getting ready to move things into the basement area, which is one of the places that I store things. So about, I don't know, almost 3 weeks ago, I moved all the euchomis in their pots, because I store them in their pots, into a spot where rain doesn't get to them. And I put the pots on their sides, so there was no danger of blowing rain getting into them, because I want that medium to dry out and I want the euchomis to go dormant. And if they don't behave, they're going to get their fading leaves cut off. But that's what I do every year with those. So they seem to hold their leaves until the last minute.
Just going to say, I did the same thing. I carried my pots onto the porch, and some of them, I mean, the foliage looks like it's June or July. Yeah, it's like so gorgeous and leathery, thick and green. Yeah. And these are the pineapple lilies, of which there's little ones and big ones, all different species and so forth. And so you store them in the pots in the cellar. You let them dry down in a protected spot and then carry them into the cellar when they're
right. And the cellar is probably, I don't know, 55 to 60. So it's not that cold. But I keep them dry. And then I freak out twice a winter and just sprinkle a little water on the top, really very little. But some of the, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I've been unpotting them in recent years because it got to be too much carrying so many pots of so many things down these, you know, little bit scary cellar stairs.
Every year it's more.
Yeah. So I started unpotting.
My basement is ground level, walk in the back. So.
Oh, okay. That's good.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So I've been unpotting the pineapple lilies and, you know, again, with the paper bags, or the equivalent, I've been, you know, labeling which is which and then putting them in and then just putting the, emptying the pots out, the potting medium out. So that's also had a secondary positive effect besides not carrying the stuff up and down the stairs, is that I actually repot my euchomis every year because of that. And they like it because they get very congested and they bloom better with the repotting.
And I unpot them. It's just a fast way to store them for me.
Yeah.
I don't think it's beneficial necessarily. You know, as you're saying that, I'm wondering about critters in those paper bags, but you haven't had any trouble.
No, I don't think they're very tasty. From my experience, because I would definitely have mice and so forth in the cellar from time to time. It's an old house. But I've never had any kind of interest in them.
Yeah, well, speaking of not tasty... Yeah. There's some things that go dormant reliably. I mean, they've been dormant for probably 2 or 3 weeks. It just all of a sudden went bleh, like the Amorphophallus.
Voodoo lilies.
I don't know what I would call that.
Voodoo
lilies. Dracunculus is the dragon lily. I don't have that now.
Yeah.
I know that you love Soramatum.
Yeah, the soramatum. So the Amorphophallus and the soramatums, the voodoo lilies. Years ago, I started kind of collecting them. I got the first ones at Tony Avon at Plant Delights Nursery, and then Broken Arrow Nursery started collecting them. And, you know, so I have all these oddballs, most of whose names I can't remember. And I actually just love them for their foliage that they have, as we've talked about before, those crazy, you know, stinky flowers and so forth. But Tony told me years ago, he says, oh, you can just unpot those and store them in your dresser drawer in the winter. That's what he told me. Apparently, they're pretty bulletproof. So no particular special needs with those when they're dormant. Yeah, and my cannas got frosted off finally.
Oh.
You know, because they're like 10 feet tall and they got frosted off. And
oh, and your dahlias too?
Well, I don't have any dahlias. I'm not a dahlia person, but too pretty. You know me, I like the leaves.
Well,
I like cannas more. But yeah, they finally got frosted off. So a friend, I was able to get a helper to come because it's quite a job to dig them all and get them down into the cellar in big plastic laundry baskets. So they're down there. They're down there. But ideally, you want to wait till this stuff, dahlias, cannas, gets frosted off, give it that signal to go to sleep, kind of, right? And then...
Ken should say, someone should say, if you live in zone 8 and even zone 7, I've seen cannas in zone 7 and I say, dig, and people go, dig?
Because, why would you do that? Right. Right.
Maybe they plant them deeper too. I don't know.
Yeah. I find that those, though, compared to the Eucomus, they do a little better, not at like 60 degrees, like 40 to 50 degrees, you know, would be better, like under 50. And obviously nowhere near freezing, but, you know, a little bit cooler, I think is better.
If you divide them, you'd wait till spring to divide them?
Yeah. Some of them come out of the ground kind of, you know, wonky. And so I kind of look for any broken parts or damaged parts and, you know, cut those off. But generally speaking, I try to lift them intact if I can. But yeah, I've got all different sizes. You know, some are small pieces and some are giant. Yeah, but around 40 to 50 and just dormant. I mean, they're just asleep. And like I said, I bought a bunch of plastic laundry baskets a few years ago to make it easier to carry them, you know, bunches them up and down.
Yeah.
You know, at the cheap at the big box store or whatever. And that works fine. Whereas the dahlias, I think, don't you have to store those more in a medium of some kind?
Oh, yeah. Definitely make a distinction.
Yeah, because the cannas, it's like you can throw it in the cellar and it's like fine. But the dahlia, it can shrink, shrivel, and or rot.
That's really interesting because the cannas are rhizomes and the dahlias are tubers. Mm-hmm. And the dahlias have thin skin and they can shrivel and dry out. And the cannas are almost waxy, you know, so they keep their moisture. So it's must not be confused.
Use like sawdust, wood shavings?
Well, some years I've used oak leaves in a plastic bag.
Oh,
I use whatever. I don't use peat moss anymore. I used to use peat moss. I can't get wood shavings. I don't know. I can maybe find sawdust, but then I think that would get kind of gloppy. So what did I do last time? I can't remember. I do something different every year, but the idea that it's something that will retain a bit of moisture that won't get slimy and packed down like shredded newspaper, you wouldn't want to use that. You know, I think I used oak leaves last year.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I will confess that when I was doing some cleanup work yesterday, in the 60 something degree temperatures, I kept walking by, averting my gaze from the number of nursery pots that are in the top of the driveway that never got planted. Oops. Do you have anything still needing a home?
Well, if you're talking about maybe plunging pots or sinking pots in the ground, I do that every single year, but not just because I've forgotten. Oh, I will that too. Plastic pots, not clay pots.
That's what I was thinking about. Yeah, as I have a few things that I didn't get to it. I didn't finish a particular planting.
I've got some trees that are very precious and about 6 inches tall. And I just don't want to, first of all, I don't know where I'm going to put them yet. But also I don't want to risk putting them outside where they might get damaged. So I have a little area that I plunge them kind of together. I don't mean touching. I mean, you know, I have a little plunge nursery.
And so by plunging, what we mean is we dig a hole. We don't take the plant out of the pot. We plant it, quote unquote, pot and all. And we put it in deep enough so that it doesn't heave out as well. Yes.
Well, I plant it to the rim of the pot.
Yes, exactly.
So the medium inside the pot might be lower than the surface of the soil, but close to that. And I let the rain and the snow, and it acts just like everything around it, and it'll freeze down from the top, and maybe in from the sides and maybe up from the bottom, like the soil around it. But if you had that, if I left that pot out of the ground, it would definitely freeze more.
Right, right, right. Because there is that thermal insulation provided by even being dug in that deep, you know.
It's almost like, really, it's like healing in, they used to call it, or they still
do.
Yes. It's like planting it right in the ground and then digging it up. But rather than having to deal with that, especially when you've only got a day to do it or something.
Yeah.
Plunging the pots, I do that every year.
Yeah. Yeah. And I just do it with the things that I shamefully didn't plant at the moment. But yeah. And sometimes I just do it in the vegetable garden because it's so easy to turn the soil, you know, raised beds. Right. It's like empty, you know, the tomatoes aren't there or whatever.
That's a great idea.
Boom. Vegetable garden. Use it for the temporary nursery kind of thing. And so this then brings up all the things we just talked about, because by the way, I had this year, somebody gave me a couple of types of cannas. Usually I only have the one, the really, really tall Canna musifolia, the banana canna. And somebody gave me a couple of other ones to use in pots. And so now I have these canna tubers or whatever that, you know, I can kind of tell them apart, but you could mistake one for the other in some cases. And guess what I need to be doing with that?
And
with
my plunging. Gosh.
Yeah.
Who steals the labels?
I don't know. It's a gremlin. It's bad. It's really bad. And yet
really label everything. I'll pot up something or I'll plant a seed or I'll do something. And I think every single time I will remember what that is. And a week later, I can't remember what that one on the left is, what the one on the right is. And I'm trying to get better and better. I've got labels, but then even when I label stuff, the labels get stolen by somebody.
Yeah.
By heaving in floods, probably.
But
really, label. You won't ever be sorry if you label something.
Are you a pencil? Do you label in pencil?
I've got marker. Definitely pencil, because marker fades, even though it says it's permanent. So I don't use a Sharpie, and I got a strange soft garden label pencil, which is very black, and the I was going to say lead, but you know what I mean.
Graphite.
Well, I don't even know if it's graphite.
It might be some
waxy thing.
Yeah.
But it really lasts, and it's very black, and it's for this. And I don't know where I got it. I think I got it with labels. But anyway, as I'm labeling, and not wood labels. And right. Once I got those fabulous, I don't know if they're zinc, there's some kind of metal labels.
Yeah.
They were so beautiful. I never seen them again.
Yeah.
And they were expensive. I got them in California.
Yeah. The labeling thing. I mean, it's ridiculous. It's ridiculous. A friend of ours is kind of doing a labeling project. He's been doing it the last two seasons on his garden and, you know, deliberately like bed by bed going through and figuring out if he knows what everything is and where it's growing and stuff like that. But that's a hard way to go about it. You know,
send them here.
Retrofit. Yeah. I know. We could use the help, right? Oh, and I still have the water gardens ahead of me before, because I always say to myself, why don't you shut them down before the water is like 39 degrees and you have to stick your hands in it to get the plumbing, you know, undone and so forth. But do I ever? I mean, there I am always out there when it's as cold as can be. So do you have the river at your place?
I also have a canal garden, but you just reminded me, and I did this. I turned off all the hose bibs.
Oh yeah, I haven't done that yet because I have a little bit of washing up of a few things to do. Yeah. You know, some of the pots. Yeah.
That's important.
I know.
So you're going to put a heater in all the ponds and everything.
Yeah, and I like to say de-icer. I have two in-ground water gardens, and I like to say de-icer instead of heater. It's like a cattle tank heater or whatever, a floating, quote, pond heater. But it's not to heat the water. It's to keep a hole in the ice so that the gas buildup doesn't happen under a complete layer of ice, which would kill everyone overwintering in there, right? It would suffocate everybody. So, you know, because I have a number of species of frogs and salamanders and, you know, everybody's in there and you don't want to do that. So it's not to heat, it's not really warming the water or anything. And the other thing I have to do is I have to there's little like kind of waterfall-y kind of, you know, trickly things. And obviously those, that tubing for those would freeze when it gets consistently cold. So I have to detach those and, you know, pull the filters and things like that so they don't freeze.
So you have a pump down in the water?
I do have pumps in the water, two pumps in one and one pump in the other. One runs a filter, one runs a little like spout of water, and then in the smaller pond, it's just, yikes. It's a filter that also has the little trickle of water kind of.
Are they deep enough that they can stay in the pond?
The big filter in the big pool is pretty big and very deep, and it has an exterior filter. It's not sunken in the pond. So that's like a trash can with a lid and so forth, and it has to be lifted. Yeah. Those are really great. Rather than the kind of filter that goes in the water.
Because if something happened, there's oil in there and that would be terrible. But
No. So this is exterior. So I have that task ahead of me. So before we run out of time, I want to just ask about the last chore of the year that, of course, it's very easy to forget to make time for, and that's the tools, caring for our tools, right?
Well, it isn't the end of the world if you, I mean, you should, we're supposed to empty the gas out of the mower.
Yeah.
And we, I do clean all the grass that's stuck inside the mower. I clean that off. There's a whole debate about sharpening blades because you can sharpen a blade and it's so much work, or buy a blade for $10. But that's
for
another
shears,
story.
You mean? For shears, you mean?
No, I meant for the mower, actually.
Oh, for the mower. I'm sorry. Yeah. I was thinking
of
hand
shears. And I buy a filter for the mower, you know, the regular stuff.
Yeah.
But there's soil stuck to the spade and stuck to the shovel. And I want to get that off because I store my tools undercover, but they're in a humid area on outside. So I brush them off with a stainless steel brush so the brush doesn't rust. And then I oil them, the metal parts. And I use stainless steel with a little bit of motor oil. I mean, you don't need much at all. And I just coat the whole thing. And that's how I keep them fresh as a daisy for the spring. And I think if I had to store them in a more exposed place, I might use grease, which sometimes you need grease for other machines. You know, it comes in a tube or in a little tub. And that's a, you know, it's like a lifetime's worth of grease, but because we can't use
it. Years ago, the Blake Schreck of Garden Tool Company said to me, use linseed oil, Margaret, because you're not, you know, wherever that excess is, I mean, it's not motor oil. It's like, you know, a more natural product. So he really recommends linseed oil. And the other great thing about that is that it's good for the wooden handles as well. A light wipe with linseed oil is good for those. And the other thing that he reminded me, and I am very, very guilty of this, even though I have a concrete floor in my garage, don't lean your tools. You know, don't stand them on the floor and lean them against the wall, or rather get them off the ground because of what you just said, the humidity, the conducting of moisture is going to really, you know, from even a concrete floor of a garage or whatever is conducive to them. Yeah. So it's like, if we can, you know, the racks and hooks and pegs and all that kind of good stuff, they don't just serve the purpose of decluttering the lower layer. They're also good, get it lifted up off the ground so it's not in contact with a conduct, you know, for the moisture to be conducted. So I thought those were really good, two really good tips.
Didn't a magazine you once worked for have a thing about a bucket of sand?
Yeah, so you could, you know, in a place where you're going to put your tools, to have a bucket of sand, and you put linseed oil in the sand, and not a ton, but, you know, a little bit, so that every time you come in and out, I mean, obviously you scrape the dirt off first, but you kind of, you know, plunge it in and plunge it out a few times because the sand is abrasive and the linseed oil is lubricating and anti-moisture. So it's sort of like a great way for your trowel or your spade or whatever, your fork, to just kind of, well, just like what I just said. I mean, that's another way to do it, is to have that sort of cleaning station, so to speak, bucket of sand with linseed oil. So now, of course, we've
talked about so many things, and I just want to remind people, one at a time, just pick one
Yeah.
You're going to say, oh my God, there's so much to do. I'm overwhelmed. I can't do anything. I'm going to sit on the floor. Just one thing at a time.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
then it
won't seem like so much.
How 12 step of you.
Step one.
Yeah.
Clean spade.
Yeah. All right. So I'll talk to you soon again. Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Margaret.
Okay.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify. And you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and getting the garden ready for winter meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.